Hey everybody, the SWP is brought to you by Jim K. Ford, All Insurance Ontario, and Pico Pizza.
My job is to get the best deal available to you. With 8 companies at my disposal, I have the markets. With our expertise in home and auto insurance, we'll make it easy for you. So put me in your lineup and I'll give you an honest effort. I'm Josh, President of All Insurance Ontario. Text or call 860-6008 and I'll give you the best value. All Insurance Ontario, your modern boutique broker.
Have you heard about Pico? Pico is Ottawa's home for authentic, old-school, custom-crafted Neapolitan pizza, where it's fired up in 90 seconds and thoroughly enjoyed, without all the fuss and expensive fine dining. Pico is quick and easy, fresh and healthy, and made with the highest quality ingredients. Craft your own thin-crust pizza masterpiece with unlimited toppings for just $15. Pico, 236 Richmond Road, 170 Metcalf Street, and the new location at 305 Rideau. Jim K. Ford is a full-service commercial and fleet dealership. They supply companies in the Ottawa area with work trucks of all shapes, sizes, and functionalities, from small delivery vans to large F-650s and 750s. Jim K. Ford works with multiple body outfitters, so whether you're in towing, landscaping, or online deliveries, they'll build the right truck and body for your needs. Jim K's commercial and fleet team can help you find what you're looking for and get you back on the road. Jim K Ford, 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans.
The Steve Warren Project. Sports and whatever.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to our program for the next 30, 40 minutes. You are locked into the SWP, that be the Steve Warren Project, reveling in glorious tales of sports and whatever. My name is Steve Warren. I'm in the nation's capital. James is in Edmonton. Probably not going to talk much Sens today. You can, though. I'll invite you to check out the Sens Nation podcast, a new episode available as we speak right now. But we got lots to get to here. How COVID is crushing NHL dreams. We'll talk a little NFL. Pat Mahomes looks like he's going to play. And the Detroit Lions head coach apparently is a maniac. Those stories and lots more coming up. James, how are things today, buddy?
I'll tell you what, Stevie, is going to happen between you and I, okay? I'm going to tell you what's going to happen, okay? You piss me off, okay? I'm going to knock you down, and when you get up, I'm going to bite your bag, okay? Okay, if that doesn't work, okay, I'm going to knock you down again, okay? And I'm going to bite you again. I'm going to rip your kneecaps off, Stevie, okay? Yeah. And that's not the end, though, Steve. That's not the end. If you do that, I'm gonna cut your hamstrings out and eat it for lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. Hamstrings and cheese sandwiches. I'm gonna have, pal. Okay. Yeah.
People are wondering right now why you're off to such a violent start to the show here, and it's because the two of us were just reveling in the opening news conference for the new Detroit Lions head coach, Dan Campbell, former NFL player, signed a 6-year deal, which is kind of interesting unto itself, to be the head coach of the Lions. But his opening news conference was the stuff of legends, sounding very much like your standard WWE wrestler as he gets ready for his next match. So this is Dan Campbell and what he had to say about what the Lions will be in his tenure.
All right, and so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right, and when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you, and when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right, and we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take 2 more shots to knock us down. All right, and on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up, and then it's going to take 3 shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right, that's going to be the mentality.
Okay, so there's Dan Campbell, the new Detroit Lions head coach. What the hell was that?
I can't get enough of that.
Is he a pro wrestler? Is he a serial killer? I don't even know.
What's the game plan, coach? His opening presser. Yeah, here's what we're going to do. You know, it was kind of funny when I first rolled tape there to listen to that vid. Oh, yeah, that's funny. Okay, we're going to chew on your kneecaps. Okay, and then I thought it would be, well, you know, we gotta beef up our defensive core a little bit there. You know, we're lacking there. No, it just kept going.
And my first question, my follow-up question, if I'm at that thing, would have been something along the lines, he's talking about biting off a kneecap and stuff. My first follow-up question, James, would be, Dan, you realize you're not actually Detroit Lions, right? You realize that's just a nickname. You're not actually coaching the gigantic feline creature that roams the jungle, king of the jungle, because it certainly seems like he thinks that.
Well, could you, yeah, not only that, Steve, but so the guy gets a 6-year deal. Okay, so he interviews for the job, right? Like that's the normal path these things take. We put the word out there. We're looking for, you know, we're looking for interviewing guys. So he probably does this great interview, right? I've always wanted to be a fly on the wall for head coaching interviews, right? Just to see what they're possibly going to say to convince a team to hire them. Excuse me. So you're assuming the guy comes in and says, I go back to when Hitchcock got hired here in the Oilers three coaches ago or whatever. The Oilers have been through so many coaches, but and he came out and said, you know, this is exactly what this team is needs. This is exactly what they're doing wrong. And, you know, these two guys aren't playing. So it was really good, you know. It was really good. You're like, okay, there we go. You know, not just some lame duck thing. So this guy probably does a beautiful interview. And then they're going, let's all go down to his first press conference. You know, he was so impressive in the interview. We signed him to a 6-year deal. And then the general manager and the president of the club are looking at each other going, well, this never came out when he was talking.
Yeah.
The guy forgot to put in there, oh, by the way, I'm an insane maniac, you know?
Well, and it's just like, it was a bad look. I thought it came across as amateurish. You know, it's one thing when you're a coach and you're in the room right before the game and you know that the guys have all been schooled. They've got their X's and O's.
Right.
They're well-prepared football-wise for the game. And then at that stage, then maybe you start speaking in mottos and metaphors like he was there. But that would be the only time that would seem to me to be appropriate. Here you're dealing with people in, you know, in a Zoom call situation, media. They're not looking to get motivated by you, per se. I know that he's talking to the fans, and maybe he thought that was the way to go, that the fans would appreciate something like that. But I just look at that, and I say, that's an imbalanced guy.
Right. Totally. Totally. Well, you'd be frightened if the guy busted that out, you know, in talking to you about, you know, applying for this job or whatever. You know, you go, okay, you'd listen, Steve. You go, okay, take it easy, because this guy may snap right here in the room and bust the desk over our head. Okay, well, we'll consider you. Okay, thank you. Thanks for coming. Okay, good. Yeah, someone walk him out of the building. Get him out of the building. Anyway.
I fully believe that he'll have a folding metal chair handy somewhere. If the referee makes a call he doesn't like, he's going to run out and smash him over the head with it.
Yeah.
All I hear there is a guy that's declaring to the rest of the league that they're going to lead the NFL in objectionable conduct penalties for the coming year.
Well, I thought it was a joke. You know, I thought it was one of those YouTube,
like a skit.
Yeah, totally, totally. Like on Saturday Night Live or something. You know. Anyway,
okay, let's flip it to the NHL. A couple of things I want to get into, and one of them was one that we were talking about off the air, and that's the Washington Capitals with four different guys right now that are going to be sidelined due to COVID. It's not that they have COVID per se, but it's the Washington Capitals that we're talking about. And there seems to be a little bit of controversy that goes with it because, well, Alex Ovechkin is one of the guys, one of the very best players in all the NHL. And by the way, Yevgeny Kuznetsov, not that far behind him. Unbelievable player. So you got Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Ilya Samsonov, and Dmitry Orlov. They're all in quarantine, and they're going to miss the next four games. And they were on the league's COVID list after violating protocols, leading to a $100,000 team fine. Caps announced shortly after that the players were interacting in the team hotel outside of club-approved areas. I think it was Ovechkin's wife that took to social media as well, really second-guessing everything because it's like, oh, yeah, it's the Russian players in the hotel room. That's causing everything. What about every player sitting on the bench together across the league? And, you know, cited a few other examples of how this just seems almost silly. And but it's boy, that's a big miss for the next four games for the Washington Capitals. That's four of their best players.
Yeah, it's not really clear on what they did to bust the restriction here. Capitals, shortly after the players were interacting in the team hotel outside of club approved areas. You know, it doesn't, like, I want to read there, okay, they went to a restaurant or something, you know, that they weren't supposed to go to, or I don't know. They all rode in an Uber together on
I think they're all in the same hotel room was the deal. And this, and I found Ovechkin's wife's comments on Instagram. Nastya is her name. And she said, of course you can't catch the virus when you and your teammates sit together on the bench, hug each other when they score a goal, or when they're all together in the lounge or the locker room. Players cannot get infected when they are at the restaurants, supermarkets, malls. The virus actually only works when you're sitting together in a hotel room. The one who came up with this rule, obviously very logical, so steeped in sarcasm
Yeah. Well, I'd like to know what it is then. I'm not clear. I just assumed. So when they're in the bubble, they designate hotels. That's, that's what they did here, right? Last year in Edmonton was a bubble spot, right, in Toronto?
Right.
I just assumed that we're in a bubble, but the team's all together, you know, like...
Well, they're not in a bubble, right? The NHL regular season is not operating in a bubble.
Right. I understand that, but they aren't now, but when they did that, all the teams were together in the same hotel, like this would be. I think they're eating meals together. I assumed when teams are, you know, isolating as a team. I the way this reads is that every player is alone in their hotel room, never leaving their room once they get back there. I don't understand it. I'm not clear on how a hockey team right now is adheres to these to the protocols.
Well, based on Ovechkin's wife, she said the virus only works in a hotel room. That was her sarcastic statement. And so she's upset. And obviously, I think there were probably too many guys in the hotel room. I'm not sure how they're dealing it. I don't know if they have one person per hotel room or two, but maybe there were four and that's enough. And yeah, she's looking at it more of like this. They're really looking at it in a technicality and that he has to miss four games now because of this. And so I guess that's... what went down? There were just too many guys in one hotel room,
right, Steve? But that I agree with her. So how do they get to the rink from the hotel? Does each guy Uber individually? Do two guys in a cab? I just assume that the whole team piles onto a bus. The whole team is together. Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm not clear. I'm not clear on what the.
It may have been numbers. Maybe they weren't wearing their masks properly, but
well, that was in there too, right?
You can probably just say, you know, jump to conclusions. They violated the NHL's protocol. They were doing something that, technically speaking, was not mitigating the chance of transmission, and so the NHL stepped in and is obviously serious enough to not only suspend these guys for four, but a $100,000 fine on top of that.
Yeah, well, that four game thing, right, will make teams raise their eyebrows and go, okay, listen, we got to make sure we're, you know, exactly doing what we're told to do during this thing. That's a lot of games in a short schedule, Stevie.
Oh yeah, 100%.
That can make a difference here, man. So
yep, for sure. So when we come back in the show, we'll take a time out right now. We're going to talk a little bit about how COVID is ending serious NHL dreams, and we'll also get our NFL selections for the conference championship weekend. That's after these words.
My job is to get the best deal available to you. With eight companies at my disposal, I have the markets. With our expertise in home and auto insurance, we'll make it easy for you. So put me in your lineup and I'll give you an honest effort. I'm Josh, president of All Insurance Ontario. Text or call 860-6008 and I'll give you the best value. All Insurance Ontario, your modern boutique broker.
Jim K. Ford is a full-service commercial and fleet dealership. They supply companies in the Ottawa area with work trucks of all shapes, sizes, and functionalities, from small delivery vans to the big F-750s. Whether you're in towing, landscaping, or deliveries, Jim K. Ford will help you with the right truck and body for your needs. JimKFord.com, 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans. Pico is Ottawa's home for authentic, old-school, custom-crafted Neapolitan pizza without all the fuss and expense of fine dining. Pico is quick and easy, fresh and healthy, and made with the highest quality ingredients. Craft your own thin crust pizza masterpiece with unlimited toppings for only $15. Pico, 236 Richmond Road, 170 Metcalf, or the new location at 305 Rideau.
And if you're thinking of buying or selling a home in the Ottawa area, I recommend the Glenn Walton Real Estate Team. Glenn helped me sell our home back in the fall. He set aside a budget to help us with painting, cleaning, home staging, even updating our ceiling lights for us. We got multiple offers, and the home sold for well over asking price. Call Glenn today. The Glenn Walton Real Estate Team at glennwalton.com. Also wanted to talk today about COVID and the NHL and how COVID is kind of crushing NHL dreams right now. And what's that line from Moneyball? It's like, at some point in our lives, we're all told we can't play the game anymore. Like, you know, you get knocked off course for your NHL dream. You know, it happens at various times in our lives, but eventually we're all told. Most of us know by the time we're about 12 years old, we're not going to the NHL. But there are hundreds of guys who just completely dominate the game all the way up, right until they hit the NHL, and then there's a wall there. And those guys, I mean, they have every right to dream and think they can make it. And so they ride the buses in the minors, hotel rooms and all that, and wait for their big break. And then suddenly after about 4 or 5 years, still great players, but the discussion of being an NHLer just stops. And people start to think of them as career minor leaguers. And they accept that, right? They're making 70 grand, most of them. Right. A few of them will make, you know, the really top guys who are ripping up the American Hockey League but just can't get to the NHL. They might make 200,000-300,000, but there's not very many of those guys. Most are on 70 grand. And COVID now has forced a lot of those guys to make some hard decisions in that they're leaving the game right now and joining the real world and looking for real jobs because they need the money. Mm-hmm. Because American Hockey League action, it won't start till February. It's like the first week of February. If it starts, who knows? It's not going to start at all for the East Coast League in the North Division, British Elite League not happening. And so their minor league deals don't kick in until the first week of the season happens, and they don't know for sure when seasons are starting. And you think about them losing money all through COVID. The league shut down in March. And again, they weren't making much money anyway. So really difficult situation to see these dreams dying all over the place right now down in the minors.
Right. This week, you know, we Russ is on the suspendables. Russ wasn't able to do it. There was a big power outage in California. And so I interviewed Kirk McLean. Mm-hmm. By the way, he said when Russ said the power was out in California, he said it's probably Trump before he leaves turning out the power on America.
He's going to do something.
His final move here. I got an idea. I'm going to turn the lights off here. Anyway, it's sort of like when you tell me this story, Stephen. It's a real realistic story. It's a reality check about wanting to make your life as a hockey player and want to make the show, right? And, you know, when I interviewed Kirk, he talked about that, you know, and talked about the chances, again, of you making the NHL are about zero, okay? About it's 2%, mm-hmm. 1 or 2%. And then we go, well, how can it only be 2%, you know? Because 7 jillion guys are playing hockey, 7 jillion.
I'll jump in there, and that I've seen the Hockey Canada stats, and the number is well below 1%. It's a fraction of 1%.
Right. So you know, a good parent, okay, an honest coach, an honest teacher, an honest parent, you know, is going to say to these kids, "We got to get you playing something else if you want to stay active and have other interests, right? Because you're not going to make it." I understand you can't tell a kid that, and I boil it down to addiction, Stevie, almost. That you know, when you're told that, okay, when you're told there's no way you're going to make it, okay, it's just impossible to try and make this thing, right? And then everyone goes, the parent and the kid goes, I know, but I'm going to try. But I'm going to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And you're going, well, no, listen to what I'm saying. You know, listen to what I'm saying. You don't want to go down that road, you know? You're talking about trying to make the NHL where there's, again, 1 million kids, 2 million. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, who play hockey, but everyone kind of ignores it, you know? So it's kind of like when you tell me this story today, you know, people are going to look up and go, you know, we warned them, you know, we warned them. I don't want to sound like a bitterman here going, well, Jimmy, you can't crush the dreams of some kid. I'm saying this isn't just a dream, right? That can come true. It's a full on fantasy, man, that you're going to make the league.
Right.
You know, it's beyond a dream, man. You know,
it's hard though, because, you know, as I said at the start, it's like most of us get a good feel for it when we're quite young, that it's just, right. It's just not in the cards, but it's so enticing, right? These guys dominate all the way up to the NHL level and can't quite get there. It's just not in the cards. And that must be so, so hard. I can't even relate to that because, I mean, I got a good dose. And maybe you can share your story of when you realized that the NHL dream was not for you. Mine was when I read a magazine when I was about 13 years old, and it was Lanny McDonald that destroyed my NHL dream. He basically put it in the simplest terms possible, and it was, if you don't completely dominate the game in your town, at your level, then you likely don't have what it takes to make the NHL.
Right.
But these guys did do that, and they still didn't make the NHL, so it's even worse than Lanny lays it out.
Yeah, Jack Nicklaus said, you know, a lot of guys who are really good amateur players, okay, who you know, they're looking at their life going, you know, they've got this dream, Stevie, to be a professional golfer, and they believe it. They're you know, tearing everyone apart. They're beating everyone. They're winning every tournament, and you know, Jack said, when they asked him, when should a guy live out that dream? When should he move forward, saying, okay, I can make the PGA. And Jack said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, go to his home course, okay, wherever it is, wherever he grew up, and if every time he plays golf on that home course, that he's, you know, minimum 6 under par, every time he plays, okay, every time, mm-hmm. That would be, there you go, okay, if you're that guy, okay? So you're going to look up and go, well, I can't do that. And Jack's going, Then you can't play in the PGA.
Right.
You know, you can't play in the PGA. You know, you look, it's funny you bring that up, or I do about the dream. Mike Weir, by the way, I just saw a thing. He's on the senior tour now, and he's playing again tomorrow. He played in the PGA event last week and made the cut. He shot 59 yesterday.
What?
Yeah, he shot in a practice round.
Oh.
In a practice round, you know, or a pro-am or something like that.
And he had good Masters this year, too.
Yes, yeah. So, anyway, this is a great topic. This is a great topic, and you know, because of COVID, it comes to the forefront here, right? What's going to happen with all these guys? You know, what's going to happen with all these guys? That, and I really think it's, you know, I told you so, right? And to do your kid justice, you know, this is a little different, Stevie. If you had your son or daughter who had the dream, who played baseball and had a dream of making the Canadian national team. Right? You're going to go, yeah, there we go. That's realistic. Right? Something like that.
Still a long shot.
Long shot. But I really think, you know, anyway, Kirk McLean went on to say, and I said, well, why does this happen? You know, he said, it's 100% because of the parents, you know, that the parents have this crazy dream. We've talked about this many times over the years, that these parents have this crazy dream, you know, that they're the ones, you know, pushing the kids. Even the great one says they should not allow them to be playing hockey year round, and they should have to be playing in other sports, you know, mm-hmm. or doing something else. Like, you know, Craig Simpson, Craig McTavish, all those guys, they all got degrees when they were playing pro hockey. They all got their, he's got an MBA. Simpson, went back to Western University, got his degree. You know, now they've had great careers, post playing careers, but yeah, it's
it's definitely an interesting thing when it comes to parents. And you can hear that episode of The Suspendables. It's up right now with Kirk McLean filling in for Russ Courtnell this week. And it's not just because we talk about parents and pushing sometimes, you know, to the max degree, you know, the so-called bad sports parent. That's what we think of immediately when we think about parents and kids playing. But there's also, like, even if you're like really super engaged in it, and maybe you're not the one that's like, you know, yelling up in the car or yelling at the rink or anything like that, and manipulating, you know, talking to coaches and making phone calls and emails and stuff and just super involved. You also have to be careful not to wind up the entire child's self-esteem in the success in the sport, because right. The child, after a while, that feels like their only validation, what they accomplish in the sport. And that can be a tricky thing when things, and they almost always do, when things come to a close, and, you know, the parent is so wound up in the child and minor sports, and now the sports comes to an end, and the dad goes over here and just starts reading the newspaper more often, and the kid's going, I can do other things too. So it can be, even though we think about that sports, that over-the-top sports parent only in those, you know, obvious terms, there are some less obvious ways as well.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, say you do make it, Steve. Okay. Say you make it as a 20-year-old, you know, say you get drafted, right? You get drafted by a junior team. You go through the ranks. You're great. You're ripping it up all over the place. And you do, you make it onto an NHL team. Mm-hmm. What happens when, the guy plays, has a great career and it finished after 6 years. Mm-hmm. So now you're 26, right? And you got, I guess you probably have a pile of money, but maybe not, you know.
Yeah, you should be set up though.
You should be set up. You should be set up. But what are you going to do for the rest of your life? You know, if I was 60, I got no problem, right? anyway, what fits right into this discussion, Stevie, and it's your homework for tonight. It's a two-part series, and I watched the first part last night, the Tiger Woods documentary.
Oh, okay.
And it is off the charts good. Off the charts good. And the reason it's so good is you're going to see footage of Tiger long before he turned pro. Long before he turned pro.
Cool.
He was on a couple of nighttime talk shows when he was 2 years old. 2 years old. That people started watching this guy. You're going to come away, I haven't watched the second part yet, but you're going to come away going, speaking of parents, when you start to hear the way his father was, okay, Earl Woods, you're going to go, someone should have committed this guy. Someone should have stopped this guy.
Wow.
From what it's crazy, Steve, what this guy said, what he talks about, what he ignored by all rules of good parenting. It's unreal that Tiger became as good as he did with a parent like that. With a father like he had.
Well, I'm going to look at that this weekend. My wife actually said to me, so we should watch that Tiger documentary.
You're going
to
love it.
Great. Yeah. I'll have a look at it.
You're going to love it. They do interviews with his first girlfriend. Like, I've never even heard of her.
Wow.
It's fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. All kinds of footage of him hanging out in a couple of frat houses and, in his classroom, going to college, you know, he was in an accounting class. That's where he met his first girlfriend, and he had the highest mark. And there's all sorts of really cool shit on there, really cool. But you're going to come away going, oh, my God. We all knew his dad was, you know, fierce with Tiger's upbringing. He was an absolute drill sergeant with this guy. And you're going to, it's almost going to make you uncomfortable, to be honest. It's going to make you uncomfortable when you hear the way Earl Woods carried on.
I'm shocked that Tiger permitted any of this, to be honest, because he's, when you think back, particularly to the first part of his career, we all know how close to the vest he kept his cards, and, he's firing caddies because they say the wrong thing, and he just did not want to share much of his life beyond what happened on the golf course, and this is a complete opening of the book, and I assume with all the video that they've accumulated here that some of it had to come from Tiger himself. Do you know if it's an authorized documentary?
That's a great question, Steve, whether Tiger was behind this or not, because some of it you would say yes, right? Some of it you go, okay, I got no problem with that. I'm held up in pretty high esteem. And some of the other ones going, I cannot think for 1 second that Tiger Woods would have approved that last segment they did here on
right.
the show.
Right.
You know, it just, it doesn't show his father in a very good light. So, and most of that, it's only a two-part series, and most of that first part is all about his dad. And I've never been more uncomfortable, you know, thinking about a crazed parent, man. Now, in the end, right, again, in the end, it's like, well, call him wrong. Call Mr. Woods wrong. Look what happened with his kid. He became the best golfer of all time.
Well, I'd wonder, when you're talking about the PGA or the NHL, which are the two leagues or sports that we've been talking about here today, I wonder how many guys you can come across where you go and meet their parents and you say, there was no pushing. There was the parent was just like, I didn't care. I didn't care if he played or not. And he's all excited about it, and I had nothing to right. do with it. And sometimes I wouldn't even go to the games, but he sure loved it. I bet you there's not very many parents of athletes that good in either league. I think that in most cases, there needs to be someone to get to the level these people have. There mm-hmm. needs to be someone kind of giving the kid a shove.
Yeah, he did. I don't want to give any away, but, you know, they interviewed his kindergarten teacher. Okay, Tiger's kindergarten teacher. She said a couple of things. And then, you know, she said, I was warned when Tiger came into my class, I was warned that you're going to have to deal with his father.
Right.
Okay. Now, the kid's in kindergarten, Steve. Okay. And she, you know, she said he was an absolute prick to have to deal with.
Right.
You know, of the shit he came. You know, she said, when you saw Mr. Woods walking into school, everyone hit the deck. You know, so it's like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly think parenting, as far as sports go, and being a coach, same kind of thing. It's like the Hippocratic Oath as a doctor goes, and that is do no harm, right? That's the biggest thing. If you've gone into the process, that should always be your mandate, especially when a kid's that young in kindergarten. Your only goal should be that they're engaged and excited to come back to the golf course or come back to the rink, whether it's the next day or the next season. And you really, right. really play with fire on that stuff when you go so hard, so young. And Tiger's a special person just to get through all that.
Well, here's the other thing, Steve. Okay. So, again, McLean brought this up. He said, here's the crazy part about crazy parents. Yes, for sure, we get to see this outlandish behavior by a parent, you know, yelling at his own kid all the time on the ice. You know, bag skating his kid at 10 years old in their backyard, you know, making him shoot pucks till his hands are bleeding. You know, Tiger was hitting golf balls in his garage. Well, Mrs. Woods, I forget her name. Well, his mother fed him, okay, when he was like, you know, 4 or 5 years old, fed him between shots instead of coming in for, it was just nuts, right? So you've got all that crazy parent thing, okay? What makes them really nuts is they start to phone the coaches of the kid's team. Okay, after the game,
right?
Okay, and it's like, do you not see how this is wrong? Do you not that you're phoning saying your kid should have had more ice time? Okay, so all of that's wrong. So if you asked anyone, Steve, okay, if you asked other coaches, if you asked other parents what this guy should be doing, this parent, if you asked other teammates what they should be doing, okay, they all would say, okay, that's wrong the way he's handling this. What no one does, Stevie, if you really want to know what's wrong, ask the kid himself. Mm-hmm. Ask the kid himself if you want your dad, because you got benched tonight for a period. Do you want your dad to phone the coach? Okay, I guarantee you, Steve, 100% of those kids will go, oh my God, no.
Yeah,
you know,
if they have the courage to, you know, say what they truly believe.
Well, yeah, I remember my kid had some run-in with a teacher or something about a mark, blah blah blah, or something like that, and I was getting my horns up a little bit. And I said, let me call your teacher and find out what happened there with what. And my son said, absolutely not, Dad. Forget that, man. Mm-hmm. You're setting me up for the kill, you know? So that should be who you ask.
Yeah.
Ask your 10-year-old son if he's really big on you, the you know, talking to coaches and screaming at other players, and, you know?
Yeah, chances are they are not. No question about it. So back to the Tiger thing, though. I am really looking forward to seeing that documentary this weekend, and we'll talk about it in our next episode. Coming up this weekend as well, it's the AFC and NFC Conference Championships in the NFL. And right now you have a two-game lead on me in the picking department. So we're jacking it up. We're going to go $20 a game for this weekend. And it's time to go, I don't know, Jimmy picking? You are looking live at the dining room table of Mr. Jimmy Jerome as we get ready for the conference championships in the National Football League. I'll let you have first pick. NFC title game will go off first at 3:05 Sunday. Battle of the Bays, Green Bay versus Tampa Bay. And then you have Buffalo at Kansas City at 6:40 in the AFC title game. Which game do you want first?
Well, I know you want Green Bay. You're
ideally.
So, yeah, you're so you got so much tunnel vision about that team. You would probably take them at unbelievable odds.
It's not unbelievable odds because the Packers are only a 3.5-point favorite. Kansas City goes off at home a 2.5-point favorite. And by the way, Patrick Mahomes was in full practice today as we record this on a Thursday. He's trying to overcome a concussion he suffered against Cleveland. Looked like a bad one, glassy-eyed, dizzy. But he had a full participation in practice today and had his helmet on. So that's always a good sign. And, hard to believe after the way he walked off the field Sunday that he's going to be ready 1 week later. But here we are.
Did you say the Kansas City is only favored by 2.5 at home?
Correct.
They must be making that line thinking he's not playing.
Yeah, you're probably right. Because
I'll take KC there all day long if Mahomes is playing. All day, I'll take that.
Yeah.
And I'll give you Green Bay.
Okay, that's fair.
But I know Buffalo's good, and I love the story of Buffalo, but... And anyways, home field advantage probably doesn't matter, right? There are no freaking fans, so...
Well, and they also... the odds makers have seen it all, too, right? They see a guy that comes off the field like that. Yeah, you're practicing today. And again, maybe you're right. Maybe it hasn't been updated yet. But they've also seen it all. And sometimes you'll see that. Whatever the sport is, guy's not going to play, but he's going to go out and practice just to give the other team something to think about. But it looks like he's good to go. He practiced fine today. So you get Kansas City by 2.5. I will take Green Bay by 3.5. That's a little more than I'd like. I was hoping that they would stay a field goal or under because I do think that's going to be an epic game. Tom Brady against Aaron Rodgers. Oof. I think that's the first time they've ever met in the playoffs.
Okay. So just to be clear, Steve, I got KC in Tampa. KC is a 2.5-point favorite, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So I got KC minus 2.5, and I got Tampa plus 3.5?
Right.
Okay. Tampa plus 3.5. And we're doing these for 20.
20 apiece.
Yeah, because I'm up $10. Okay.
Remember when we used to worry about actual cash being wagered? That's the fun thing about podcasting. We could do what we want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We'll call it quits right there. Any final thoughts?
I do have a final thought, Stevie.
Okay.
I've got lots. I've got lots, by the way. You know what? I just turned my interest to, because I forgot about that, watching the NBA. And my biggest interest, not so much the Raptors, but I want to see how Steve Nash does, right? He's like 9-7 or something, head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. So anyway, I'm going to follow that. So I talked to a buddy of mine last night, Stevie, that I worked with at Molson. I moved out here when I was 23 in 1985.
Yeah.
With Molson. And I met a bunch of great guys. I worked for Molson for 3 or 4 years before I quit. Mm-hmm. And went and did other things. And anyway, I love staying connected to those old guys and following up. And then there's a friend of mine who loves doing that as well. And he phoned me last night. And as a lot of these calls go from guys I haven't heard from, Charlie is his name. And we shot the shit. Where is he now? Where's the other guy now? And blah, 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 right? Did all that. And I get a real charge out of that, right? And then here it comes, Stevie. Okay? Here it comes all the time, Steve, when I get phone calls from guys I haven't heard of. Hey, can you, I'm just wondering before we hang up here, you know, great talking to you. I've got a couple things I want to get signed. Okay.
Right.
From the great one. Okay. I get that all the time, Steve, all the freaking time. And, it just like takes the wind out of me, you know, takes the wind. I say, okay, I get it. I get it. You don't really like our time together.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And, a lot of it is, could he just, you know, where can I get this stuff signed? I don't want it signed to anybody. I just wonder if Wayne would sign this thing and I'm going to, you know, give it to my kid. And I'm like, no, you're not. That's bullshit. Okay.
Lots of times I hear about that. I see, you know, that they sell it, you know. Anyway, this guy, Charlie, says, I've got some things I want to get signed, you know, and I've got, now it was highly collectible stuff, Steve, that he bought. And he gave me the prices of a couple of things that he bought. Like he bought, when a player wins the Stanley Cup, Steve, they get a replica Stanley Cup.
Right.
I'd forgotten about that, right? They get their own little Stanley Cup. And one of the items he had was the, because Maurice Richard won, I don't know, 11 cups or something like that.
Okay. I think the record holder is Henri Richard at 10. So I don't think
he's 11. Maybe it's Henri. Well, he's got the 11th cup of one of these guys, one of the Richards, okay? Of their personal cup. I said, what'd that cost you? It's like 4,000, you know? So he's telling me this, he's got a game-worn Sid Crosby playoff jersey, shit like that, right?
Yep.
And then these items that he has from Wayne. And so I'm really interested in this, right? He's banging off all these items. I'm going, okay, I get it. This guy's doing this as a fucking investment, and he wants to sell them, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, no, I don't know. It'll take a couple of years if you want me to get something signed. You know, he says, okay, I'll wait. I said, what are you going to do with all this stuff? No, he doesn't have any children, and he lives alone. No girlfriend or anything. 65 years old.
Uh-huh.
I said, why? What are you going to do with all that? You know, because I thought he would be selling this for his retirement. He said, the stuff that I get signed, okay, every year I pick a charity and I give it to them. And I went, beautiful, you know?
Cool.
So he's got, he's been doing it for years. Like, and he goes, I didn't want to give them just sort of lame items, you know, that you get all the time from guys, right, that you could buy. So that's what this guy does, you know? And I said, what a great reason to collect, you know? What a nice reason to collect. So it restored this sort of faith in autograph seekers, Stevie, that I've been dealing with for years.
So you're going to hook him up?
I got to hook him up, man. Yeah, I'm going to hook him up for sure. You know, and he wheeled off the charities that he's been doing this with in the past. I love the fact, you know, and he picks a different one, like I said, every year. And wonderful, wonderful story.
Yeah.
You know? A lesson learned, you know, from people who collect to make money.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. And it's, it's always, you know, when you're dealing with a charity or a great cause. We have a mutual friend, Brad, and I think he still listens to the show here. And I believe it was his nephew. He was a junior hockey player out west, and he'd been stricken with cancer. And when somebody comes to you and asks, can you get a hold of so-and-so to get an autograph, for causes like that, for great charities, it's easy to be energized by that. But if you're looking to make a buck, it's like, you roll your eyes at someone like that. And by the way, it was Steve Yzerman in question, and this would be about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and boy, he couldn't have been more gracious. Jersey signed, all that stuff, and
right.
And I think sent a message along as well. So really nice stuff, and the players are great from that perspective as well. That's what energizes them as well, if they can lend a hand. Like we and Rick Tocchet. I mean, I was amazed at Rick Tocchet. He's one of the toughest, ornery cats that you've ever come across in the NHL. And mm-hmm. when we got him on the suspendables, we're all on the Zoom call and stuff, and you brought up that I've got an autistic son, and the guy just softened right up and was really excited to hear about some of the things Michael's up to. So, yeah, that's the thing that drives people for sure when it's good causes.
Yeah, in a perfect world, you know, I was thinking when I I talked to him for like an hour and a half, you know, catching up. In a perfect world, you love where this starts, you know, where this guy begins to collect this stuff, highly collectible stuff, by the way, you know, really valuable. And you hear the story, he's going to give it away. And you go, isn't that great, you know? But you kind of get pushed back a little bit when you think, okay, the next guy who buys that, so he gives it to a charity, there's a live auction or silent auction, and you're going, okay, but eventually that'll end, you know, that kindness that someone's going to buy it, you know, and sell it.
It will remain currency after the charity's done with it.
Maybe. In a perfect world, you'd almost like to have a caveat in there, a rule saying, okay, you have to give this away to a charity, and we got to keep it going,
right?
You know, one after another, right? That this thing just cycles around. You get to keep it for a year, you know, and display it or do whatever you want. But anyway.
Well, I remember that as your rule. Like, God, it must be going on 15 years anyway when you gifted me the Wayne Gretzky Salt Lake City jacket. I was touched. It was beautiful. And it was at your going away party, and it was great. And that was your one rule, though. You can't sell it, right? And I could see, and I never would, but just the fact that you had to say that to me tells me you've been pretty beat up in the past by people looking to make a buck.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, all right. Thanks a lot, Charlie. And I love Charlie. I love the name Charlie.
There's no bad.
I should have named one of my sons Charlie.
I was about to say, everybody loves a guy named Charlie, and then I got thinking about Charlie Manson. That's but most of the time, Charlie's a cool name. Nice guy.
Nice name. You know, bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's call it quits right there. We'll talk to you in our next episode. Enjoy your weekend, and good luck in, well, not too much good luck in your NFL picks.
Good night, everybody.
We'll see you.